This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Hanging out with us as we swing open the gateway to your weekend. We appreciate your time, folks. Remember, subscribe to the Kelly and Ramya podcast, where you can listen to the show in its full segment, full form, where we include the audio vanity card. Today, Laura Bain providing that for us. Awesome. Take in the show maybe while you're making dinner and whatever, but whichever way you take it in, we appreciate it. Segment form as well, in case you have a favorite contributor you want to go back and check out, or maybe only have the time to do that. We've got you covered. Subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. While you're in there, if you don't mind, give us a rating and review. Now, this segment here, Cut for Time, gives you an opportunity to learn about some of the segments, some of the moments in the show where we wish we could have said a little bit more on the topic or jump on the show and maybe say something in the case of Laura Bain, who joins us, one of our producers on the program and who's been doing, I think this is the second Cut for Time. So always fun to get a perspective from one of the producers who's checking out the show, putting things together. Listen, I said, gosh, I have something to add to that. How the heck do I get on there? Those guys are doing their thing. So we're going to start, however, today with Grant. He's got our first item to talk about before Laura and myself. Grant?
Yeah, that's the most frustrating part. When you want to add something, but all you can do is shout at your TV and no one hears you. So this is the best segment to get that out there. All right, starting off with Monday on this week's Know Your Rights segment, Danielle McLaughlin, she shed some light on eligibility criteria for our jury duties. Here she is discussing if individuals with disabilities can serve on juries and what kind of accommodation procedures would need to be in place.
The system, the justice system, is obliged by law to accommodate people with disabilities, if possible. So there's a good question. What does that mean? Well, it means, for example, that deaf jurors can demand a sign language interpreter. I'm not sure how it would work in certain trials for people who are blind or who have low vision. In general, please forgive me for this, but you know the saying, justice is blind, which should mean that blind people should be specifically eligible to serve on juries. But if, for example, there's a great deal of visual evidence, that might make it more difficult. Can that person have the evidence described to them? Is that going to be the same?
Well, I think at the end of the day, excluding anybody from our diverse community from the jury pool is incredibly problematic. You see jury disparities in terms of demographics, ability, disability, race, ethnicity, whatever it is. And I think that can create some bias in trials. I know that many advocates with certain disabilities, including blindness, have fought very, very hard to be able to have blind people on juries and have had some very huge success with that in certain countries. I'm very curious how that would work in Canada and how that would depend on the evidence that was going to be presented in the individual case. I do find it quite interesting, though, how we assume that our juries are unbiased. And just talking to, some people I know from the sighted community, people actually find it very difficult to do things like recognize faces. Like, this is a person that we just met the other day. Do you recognize their face if you saw them in a picture, if you saw them in a lineup? So while a blind person, for example, would maybe not be able to do that either, they may actually be less biased in terms of jury duty in general. So essentially, I think that it's really important to be able to increase diversity in juries. Yeah. Kelly, any thoughts on this?
Well, Grant, everyone who sits on a jury, we're not law people. Necessarily, you might be, I guess there can be lawyers sitting there or somebody who studies law. But we are all going to have some deficit, whether you recognize people, whether you're able to, whether you cognitively can follow it as easy. Maybe you get distracted, like you were saying in the last segment. You know, some people need that stimuli. Somebody sitting there like, oh, gosh, I don't want to sit here. I'm bored. I'm sleepy. Oh, it's hot in here. Some people are so engaged. They see everything, but maybe don't hear everything. Some of us learn things better, whether it's visually or orally. And I have to think when we talk about adding a person with a disability, our life experience may be different. Maybe it adds to this situation. I don't know, when you're a lawyer, how many of these darn things, and I'm just talking our situation of being disabled, how many of these things would you think about? Well, we know they're not used to, oh, you have a disability. How many people might they challenge, might they potentially have to choose with a disability? I'm going to say probably not a large number, but then again, you don't know about people with invisible disabilities and so on. But my simple point really is I kind of get to this and think it over. We can't know that, hey, down the way, I'm going to show some evidence that's more sound-based. I want that blind fella on the jury. Mm-hmm. We know that's not going to happen. We know that's not the effort. There are other things they look for to pull that person in. If you're defending someone, you want the people that are going to be most sympathetic and more likely to say he's innocent, she's innocent. So I guess that's the basis. We just want to be sure that we're considered and we have the right to say, oh gosh, I've got jury duty. I don't want to do it, Laura.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people with disabilities are part of society and actually overrepresented in the criminal justice system. So I think that when you exclude people with disabilities, it raises questions about what it actually means to be tried by a jury of your peers. And to Grant's point, there is a lot of bias in juries. And if you've seen that movie, what's it called? 12 Angry Men, I think.
Oh, yes.
You know, that really plays out. But I guess the hope is that maybe it's going to be less biased than the judge, which is a whole other conversation. I've actually been summoned to jury selection twice.
Wow.
But I was really young. I was like 18. And then I think I was summoned the next year. And so I had some anxiety about even like finding the court and things like that. Just silly things you feel when you're 18. So I actually got out of the summons. I think I used my disability as an excuse. I apologize to all those advocates out there. But now if I got summoned, I definitely would. I would at least be very curious to go and like see that selection process.
That's interesting. I find that fascinating when you say that, especially as we go forward, because I know as a teenager when I did law, I really was fascinated and really wanted to do it and thought it would be the greatest thing. Anyway, we'll let you pick up the ball here, Laura.
Earlier this week, we caught up with Mark Jordan and Amy Skye. They talked to us about Music Monday, one of the world's largest single events dedicated to raising awareness of the importance of music education.
Social life and acceptance in community is so important for children's and teens' self-esteem. And the difference between music and sports is that there's no competition in music. You know, everybody is, everyone's working together to create something beautiful. And the better each person does, the better for the whole. And also music, you know, on a hormonal level, there's a hormone called oxytocin, and it's known that when you sing together, and I imagine when you play together too, you get this hormone that makes you feel like you belong, and it enhances bonding between people. And that is the heart of mental health, you know, above and beyond just the aesthetics of it, to feel like you belong to a community and feel accepted and are creating something together. I think that has ramifications way beyond the actual piece of music that you're playing. So, so important for communities. And for some kids that may not be academically gifted or may not be athletically gifted, if you can gather with other kids and create something beautiful and be a part of something, that might be the highlight of your school experience.
Yeah, you know, and both of these guests were just so earnest and spoke from the heart. And what a privilege as an interviewer when you get to talk to someone who's so open like that. But just apart from, you know, what they were talking about with the intrinsic value of music and the program itself, which absolutely wonderful, they're both professional musicians. And to me, it just really spoke to, you know, how important it is when teenagers have that interest, be it music or theater or dance or sports or what have you, that it be encouraged, because it certainly can be a viable career option. For some reason, we just don't seem to think it is. And I'll always remember when I was in my early 20s and working in a call center, which was kind of a low point in my life. And I was brought into the School for the Blind to sort of try to talk some sense into this teenager who was a very talented musician and already earning money at making music. And they wanted to encourage her more into something practical like the call center route. But what a mistake, because when you're young like that and you have that passion, that is the time to go for it. And you can always go back and do something else later. And of course, for people to be able to do that, they need to be exposed to it, which is why it's so important that programming isn't cut in schools. What do you think, Grant?
I think music, arts, and drama programming, unfortunately, are some of the first things that often get cut or deprioritized, or heck, students with disabilities get taken out of it to use as, you know, time to do, you know, other Common Core curricular activities, which is not good, to put it mildly, because despite being the first things that are cut back, they're some of the most meaningful things in our lives. People get through the day just so that they can go to band practice or go and see a play, go and see their favorite band, you know, at their community center, whatever it is, go to choir practice. And I think especially for young people who are super impressionable and looking for things to be integrated with, I think music is just so powerful for a variety of things, everything from the most competitive, you know, skilled musicians to, you know, people who are just kind of trying to find their way. And despite actually helping in a variety of other areas related to the school curriculum, it's just so much fun and interesting and something that we're meant to do. So it's something that I think we tend to cut back on, but it's actually one of the last things we should be cutting back on, Kelly, just because it's so meaningful to so many people.
I know when I was at W. Ross McDonald, music was so important. I used to get frustrated. I mean, I took piano, baritone, trumpet, got involved with choirs there at the school, but it still was that thing of, why do we put so much on that? And sports, which was the things we really did focus on at W. Ross. It was a privilege. And when I listened to Mark and Amy speak the other day, it brings me back. And last year we had the kids on from W. Ross talking about Music Monday because they were participating in the song challenge. But it made me really think about when I first ever heard of Music Mondays and just some of the awards that music teachers receive, because there's so many places where maybe they're starting with a very small program. Maybe they only are able to teach grade 4 through 6 choir, or the high school choir at a place, and you have a small choir or a minimal amount of students that are, quote, musically gifted that get to participate, but they do what they can. And you see some of this recognition. Maybe they're in an obscure place. Music's expensive, theater's expensive, dance, whatever it might be. The arts are expensive. And as you mentioned, first cut, but I really love their sharing with us, Mark, particularly his experience of, this was the way I was able to get somewhere. I wasn't great academically, but I really could do something with this. And really appreciate their weight behind the Music Mondays as well. And people that really say, gosh, you got to have this everywhere. This is so important. And like you said, Laura, that person, well, we think she should be answering phones now. Yeah, you have a crack at something in life. A chance to do something that does take time to develop. It doesn't just come overnight. And even to the most gifted, there's so much more to it. So that encouragement, people have to be behind if someone's interested, and not discourage. Yeah, be realistic, but don't discourage. On Tuesday, we also had the pleasure of talking with Audrey-Anne Bouchard, who's a visually impaired visually impaired based artist, creating multi-sensory theater pieces that are accessible to blind and partially sighted audiences. Now, her award-winning show, Camille, A Story, offers a completely new encounter with dance and theater.
We've created, this is a show we've taken many years to create, and it is made so that it it starts slowly and it starts, you know, we, at first we don't use too many stimulations, and there's a big preparation process that is part of the experience. So, you know, when the show starts at 8:30 PM, at 8:30, you arrive, you put on the blindfold, we listen to the audio credits of the show together. I welcome all the audience for each show, and it's only 6 audience members per show. So, because it's immersive, so you're guided. So it's a very small audience, but we really take care of you and guide you. So you have a performer that's assigned to you. And if there's any moment you want to take a break or, you know, leave the performance space, that's also an option, but it's not an experience to scare people or to, you
right.
know,
All right.
To provoke. It's really, to, you know, get you to experience theater and dance in a different way. And the story is a very gentle. And so at most, you know, you usually people come out and they really, it takes a while to get used to the fact that you don't see for people who are sighted. Mm-hmm. You maybe the first 15 minutes, but then when you really dive in, most people have told us that it's really relaxing. Yeah. Life-changing, a lot of emotions come out too for people, just because we're not used to let go of that, you know, the visual and all the pressure that goes with that too. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Workshopping shows to me is so important, and to figure and derive at this is the amount of touch, this is the amount of that we're going to do, sound on this kind. To figure all that out takes that time of building, getting feedback. How many people are we going to have in the seats? Okay, let's go at 6. 6 seems to be a good number. I know my theater troupe, at one point we talked about doing a show in the dark. And we talked about it extensively. How would we want to do it? And kick the idea around. And this is wonderful. Lights are on. You got your blindfold. And some people might probably get to cheat a little bit under the blindfold. That's fine. But the experience itself of what you're getting, the dance, we were just talking a play and moving around, but dance and music and sound and maybe putting that scarf, as she mentions, over someone's shoulder. These gentle, subtle things to me, tremendous. I found that wonderful. It really made me think. And it's so innovative to think about what I'm going to do with those folks. I'm short on time. I apologize, you guys. Laura, anything on this for you?
Oh, just that this was outside of the box of what I've thought about with dance and accessibility before, because we always think about audio description, but this is just something completely different and really kind of reconsidering what dance even is when you take away that visual element. It's so creative. And I just wonder if the show goes on the road at all, because I would absolutely love for it to come to Halifax.
You bet. Speaking of going on the road too, you can find Amy Sky and Mark Jordan on the road too, they were saying. Just a plug for that. Grant, your final thoughts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, art is all about challenging perceptions. And how often do we go into a play and we have to adapt? We have to figure out how to do things differently. Now, the sighted community kind of has to adapt to us and experience something different. That is so cool.
Well, I think it's wonderful too, because so many of us are more open now to sound, at least with, as we talked about on the show yesterday, with Michael, and just experiences that our audiences out there are having listening to MP3s, listening to podcasts. Laura, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
Laura Bain, producer on the program, joining us from Halifax. Grant Hardy out in Vancouver, and I shall return, give you a little tease of what's coming up on AMI Audio and AMI TV over the weekend. And our closing moment, how do you define getting older? What do you think? Where does it start? It's change, you know. We'll get into it in a moment.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Ramya after this short break.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.